Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it's not every day that we get great news. Sometimes we have to look pretty far. But there are some special congressional elections in a relatively compressed time period here that are worthy of our attention. We'll have one next week in New York 26, which is the seat we had before Congressman Lee decided to, well, let's just say reveal a little too much about himself on one of those social dating websites. But the good news is
he decided to flex his political muscles, you could say.
Yeah, exactly. Over in California 36, though, it's a seat vacated by Democrat Jane Harman, who went to go head the Woodrow Wilson Center. Expected to be a pretty easy Democratic hold. The way that it works in California is the top two vote getters, regardless of party, make it to the runoff unless one of them wins over 50% in the primary. That did not happen, but it was supposed to be Democrat versus Democrat in the runoff election, and as of right now, it doesn't appear that's going to happen. Republican Craig Huey apparently finishing in second place, although there's still some absentee ballots to be counted here, but it looks good, and he will be in the July 12 runoff, it looks, against Los Angeles City Councilwoman Janice Hahn. So there's a decent chance, obviously, since she was the top vote-getter in the initial primary, that she'll be the one that ends up getting the seat, but the fact that Republicans did better than expected means that all this hand-wringing from the DNC, from MSNBC and everybody else, that the Ryan budget and all these other things are going to kill the party left, right, and center across the country would appear to be not true.
We shouldn't get our hopes too high for this, but if the Republicans were to pull off a huge upset and win this seat, the first step is make the runoff. And Craig Huey, a successful businessman, has done that. I think what impresses me most is that I don't know the exact turnout, but we're talking about the tens of thousands. He's only 2,000 votes behind Hahn, the front runner. Beat out Deborah Bowen, who's the California Secretary of State, already been elected statewide. And this was just flat out something that just wasn't supposed to happen. So, you know, when you put together with low turnout of a special election and a well-funded, well-organized Republican campaign, things can happen. I haven't talked to the NRCC yet to see whether they're willing to put in some serious resources here. Obviously, with a self-funding candidate, that makes things a little bit easier. We haven't had many elections since the midterms, and the little ones that we've had, local issue, really haven't been terribly reassuring for Republicans. So a little bit of competitiveness where it wasn't expected in Jane Harman's old district is a nice sign. It's nice to see that there's a little bit of life in the party. And in the right circumstances, the GOP might have a chance of pulling off a really big upset until redistricting completely redoes the district lines and it becomes, you know, even more heavily Democrat. But anything that can cause the DCCC a little bit of headaches is, good news for our side.
Yeah, I'll take it, definitely. And I like the fact that Craig Huey apparently has not tried to run a mealy-mouthed campaign since it's a Democratic-leaning district. One of the things that he did was trumpet an endorsement from Tom McClintock, who, California voters, you should have elected in the recall election instead of Arnold Schwarzenegger. But that's a whole different story, is obviously a very strong fiscal conservative, and that's the issue that Mr. Huey is running on as well. So we'll see if it pays off for him in July as well. On to number two now, and from campaigns that are doing better than expected to campaigns that are doing much worse than expected, back to Newt Gingrich. Obviously, he had his share of self-inflicted trouble after his Meet the Press appearance, in which he called the Paul Ryan plan right-wing social engineering when it comes to Medicare reform. Previous statements where he seemed to embrace mandates, although he's kind of walked back both of those now, or at least tried to. And now he's got this personal issue. Apparently, since his current wife still worked for the Congress into the 2000s, she had to report different liabilities and debts. And one of them was her spouse, Newt Gingrich, owing between $250,000 and $500,000 to Tiffany. And as you point out in the jolt today, Jim, that's not exactly a fiscal issue that's going to help him on the larger fiscal debate or in identifying with the typical voter.
Yeah, a couple of things that kind of jump out about this story. The first is Politico asking Rich if he'd settled the debt, and the response was no comment, which to me, if you settle the debt, that's something you usually want to take credit for. Two, this is not happening in a vacuum. This is a coming in a context in which for Republican candidates, running as the candidate of fiscal responsibility is going to be important, about the importance of shrinking debt. I think having large personal debts is not particularly appealing in a tough primary. And then there's the scale of it. I mean, I paid out of pocket for my engagement ring, and I thought that was a lot. And now I look like a cheapskate compared to Newt. You know, $250,000 to $500,000 at Tiffany's. I know those little blue boxes are pretty darn expensive, but there are certain problems where, you know, if you have a problem with a credit card bill or, you know, maybe your mortgage payments are high, a lot of, you know, some Americans might say, eh, you know, I've been there. This is not a situation in which many Republican voters will say, oh, boy, tell me about it, Newt. You know, those Tiffany's charges are just an arm and a leg. That's, you know, and so I just kind of have this feeling that, as Dave Weigel had said yesterday, this is good. This is likely Jay Leno monologue fodder. This is one of those things where I think just most Americans just can't imagine the scale of this. And you kind of wonder, like, what kind of lifestyle has Newt been living these last couple of years that he can run up pretty sizable six-figure debts to a jewelry company? I mean, this isn't even, you know, by nothing. This is not housing. This is not tuition for kids or anything like that. So I just see this being a fairly considerable problem. Probably even more disturbing for it is Politico calls up his team and asks about it, and the entire response is no comment. Like, clearly his communication staff didn't know this issue was coming. When discussing the race, clearly Newt didn't say, oh, by the way, there's this thing in my past that's probably going to be an issue. And so it just kind of continues this sense of the people around him and Newt not being ready for the inevitable scrutiny of a presidential campaign. I mean, you know, a lot of campaigns, if you're thinking about running, you sit down with your closest friends, your most trusted advisors, maybe your personal lawyer, and just kind of go through everything in your life that could be thrown against you. Because in a presidential campaign, particularly taking on Barack Obama, particularly with $1 billion to spend, particularly with a world where liberal bloggers can get stuff on MSNBC without verification, look, it's going to get out there. So you have to be ready for it. You have to have a rapid response to it. And Newt's and his team just don't, you know, like a day late and a dollar short. And maybe $250,000 to $500,000 a dollar short.
I guess so. He was interviewed by Greta Van Susteren last night on Fox News, and his response was no better than his spokesperson via print. He basically said it was a personal issue, wasn't going to comment on it. When Greta pushed him a little further, he said, how's this discussion going to help us create jobs? So he's clearly not ready for it, as you mentioned, and the fact that he answered it that way, even if there isn't much fire to the smoke, makes it look like there is. And so, again, not handled very well.
It's not criminal. It's just a matter of rather extravagant expenditures that most Americans really, you know, can't relate to. And the fact that this debt has been, you know, around for a while, some folks may get a little like, it just may suggest a certain amount of personal irresponsibility. And it's not like you could say, well, look at the rest of my personal life. It's always been very responsible. There's nothing to complain about there. You know, this is, for Newt, this is just one story after another. I think, as somebody else had put it, when somebody throwing glitter at you at a book signing is only like the third or fourth worst thing that happened to you in a day, you know it's been a really rough day. And, you know, for Newt, it just seems like it's an avalanche lately.
Yeah, his mantra at this point must be, it can only get better from here, but we'll find out. Now, on to our third and crazy martini now. And Jim, you and I are both sports fans, and so every once in a while our teams don't do very well. And sometimes they do so poorly that the coach will get fired in the middle of the season. And so you get these interim coaches, many of whom never actually get the chance to carry on full term, and they're eminently forgettable. Well, now that trend has come to Al-Qaeda. Saif al-Adel has been named the interim leader of Al-Qaeda, apparently until Ayman al-Zawahiri is ready. Apparently his many, many years as number two have not prepared him well for the role. And apparently there are some reports out there that suggest Zawahiri is abrasive and not as charismatic as bin Laden was. And sometimes his personality rubs other radical terrorists the wrong way. So it'll be just so dramatic and fascinating to see how this all plays out. And what can Saif al-Adel possibly do to prove that he's worthy of removing the interim tag?
Well, two thoughts are coming to – a whole bunch of thoughts come to mind when we hear this bizarre story. The first thing is, so who made the decision, Greg?
Exactly right.
Because isn't the person who made the decision, wouldn't he be in charge? And then the next thought is, all right, so this guy who most Americans have never heard of, and certainly I consider myself, you know, somewhat informed on how the war on terror is going. I'm not familiar with this guy. It feels a little bit like the Redskins naming John Beck their starter at quarterback this season. It's kind of like, who? Wait, what? You know. Now, obviously, I have heard the bit that Zawahiri, the last time he was running a terror group in Egypt, didn't have great personal skills. Kind of surprising in a terrorist. You kind of figure these people would really know how to, you know, get along with people, charismatic. No, Zawahiri apparently does not do these sorts of things well, and he apparently he had some sort of like chat with other Muslims who he was trying to persuade to join the jihad cause, and like managed to alienate almost everybody who he talked to. So my understanding is Zawahiri is going to be sent to AAA Haqqani Group, a little bit of say seasoning to see if he can work on his skills, and then hopefully by midseason they hope they can bring him up. It's bizarre. for a while there, it seemed like, you know, that the U.S. and our allies and all of us managed to get the number three guy in Al-Qaeda for a really long time. And it seemed like that was turning into the drummer from Spinal Tap position, where, you know, every couple of weeks somebody new would get in and some terrible disaster would befall them. Here's hoping that the number one spot in Al-Qaeda is the new position, like Murphy Brown's secretary. Every couple of weeks you look up and there's somebody new and they're being replaced, and the preceding one has died some terrible death. So hopefully this will be good news. It's kind of a bit weird. At some point, you know, this won't be something to laugh over, but whenever we can have a laugh at Al-Qaeda's expense, I always like that, Greg.
Very good. That was the How We'll End It for today. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow at this time for the next 3 Martini Lunch.